I first wanted to say a few more words about my co-presenter here today, Tomasa Buluş. She came to the program as a community health worker originally, and soon we discovered the wealth of not just experience that she had in Guatemala, her home country, doing women empowerment work, but also her wealth of knowledge about Mayan tradition and in spirituality and culture. And so after a while, she became one of our guides, and eventually she became the coordinator of our program. And she currently works for the Central American Resource Center as the coordinator of their community health workers program. So I'm gonna get started here with the disclosure that we've been all asked to do. So I have no financial interest in or relationships to disclose with this work. Most of the work I do for Asociación Mayab actually is a volunteer basis work, and so. So I usually like to start this presentation with a little show of hands. How many of you know someone who is of Mayan descent, or how many of you are of Mayan descent? Okay, So we're not as strange as most people might think. There's a region in Central America and Mexico where Mayan communities live in, and rapidly I could say there's close to 5 million descendants of the Maya living still in Mexico at least, and there might be as many or probably more so than that in other countries in Central America. So there's still a lot of us out there surviving all these centuries of colonization and in many ways also oppression. So very briefly, a little background on the community in San Francisco. Over the past 10 years, nearly 30,000 Mayan speakers from Yucatan have settled in San Francisco and also in the north part of the Bay Area. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Bay Area, but the north part of the Bay Area is Marin County, one of the wealthiest counties actually in California. And there's about half and half, like 15,000 in San Francisco, the city, another 15,000 in the North Bay Area of Mayan speakers living there currently. And then, many others from Guatemala and Chiapas, which is southern Mexico and Central America, have also found a home in other cities nearby, such as San Mateo, Oakland, and Half Moon Bay. Many of them work in the hospitality and restaurant industries. And for what we know, for well over 90% of these immigrants, Maya is their first language, which is very important when it comes to cultural competency and linguistic competency. A lot of them are bilingual in Spanish, but definitely their main way of communication and their main, most of their lives transcur in their native languages and cultures. So, given the size of this community over the past 10 years growing and growing, eventually a group of Mayan immigrants came together and founded Asociación Mayab in 2004. And the primary objective of Asociación Mayab when it was founded was to do cultural preservation work. We're not as interested in health promotion and well-being and all of that at that time. And in 2006, we engaged in a community health needs assessment. And right away after we started that process, we realized that mental health was one of the main issues impacting the community at many different levels, from stress, living in overcrowded conditions, lack of transportation, financial hardship. All these factors were impacting severely the mental health of these immigrants and leading them into other health issues such as alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, street violence. And then with all this as well to incarceration and involvement with the justice system. So we started as a cultural preservation program, and we didn't do much than that for a number of years until the assessment. And when we started our cultural preservation program, we started doing very basic things, Mayan language class, a dance lesson. every week, organizing a couple of traditional celebrations. And soon we realized that the impact that we were having by doing these activities were not just merely cultural preservation and reaffirmation and embracing or re-embracing our identity, but there were so many other things that were happening around our cultural activities, such as people interacting with each other, people breaking cycles of isolation, strengthening networks of support, people just having a chance to check in with each other and rebuild their networks that have been broken through, you know, being immigrants and coming from a different country and finding themselves in a totally strange city and with no, you know, very few friends and not a lot of people to support them. And so we realized that our cultural activities were actually serving not just as cultural activities, but also as interventions. And so that's when we decided to partner with another agency that has been doing mental health work for many years, Instituto Familiar de la Raza. We approached them and they were happy to help us write a grant, and we got a grant to establish the Indigenous Health and Wellness Collaborative. And that happened in 2009. And this is a picture of all the trainees that concluded our Health Promoters Program, which I will be talking a little bit more about in throughout this presentation. And these are the services that the Indigenous Health and Wellness Collaborative offers. It's a range of services, and we use both contemporary healing methods as well as traditional healing methods. And so we use psychotherapy and counseling, case management, information and referral, health education. We do the traditional arts workshops that I was talking about, that were the ones that helped us realize that our work was much more than just cultural participation, and does include traditional arts that are very traditional for our communities, embroidery, hammock making, and dance. And we also engage in supporting and sponsoring ceremonial and traditional celebrations, and finally community events. So it's a range of activities. So within this range of activities, it's the Mayan Health Promoters Program. Again, this is a picture of the all the people who concluded their training. So we originally trained them in like the core competencies that not all but most community health workers programs train their promotores on, which is, you know, public speaking, group facilitation, leadership skills, things like that. And then we move on to, you know, specific areas of concern, depression and or anxiety or stress and things like that. In this case, we added another element, which was the reaffirmation of the spiritual and cultural values of us as indigenous communities and how they relate to our well-being and our health. So we found a group of healers that live in the Bay Area, and they guide us into how to pass on these teachings to these new promotores, who, as I will say later, have become some sort of guardians of the culture for our community now, or in the process of becoming guardians for our culture in the context of immigration. So some of the roles of the Maya Health Promoters as of now are this. They provide bridging cultural and linguistic gaps existing between community members and service providers. They act as linguistic and cultural interpreters. Very basic information and referral, although sometimes they get into very complex information and referral. Assist in early identification and treatment. Normally, I think one of the great things about the model of health promoters is that they are very effective on early identification. And when it comes to mental health, you know, my observation has been that they've been extremely effective at identifying people who are just right about going into crisis and being able to refer them to services when needed. So it's not just prevention, but they're very good at, you know, hearing people and going to a particular situation at home, stress, violence, things like that. And there's this element of trust and, confidence to their competence and their connection, so the community members communicate to them this, and it becomes a very effective bridging between people in need and providers. They deliver basic health and wellness education, and they for sure serve as community advocates. I think it's one of their main roles. And there's some more that they do. They create opportunities for wellness and healing through their workshops. Our health promoters have come up with, you know, this approach of providing workshops on embroidery, hammock making, painting, dancing, things like that are very culturally rooted in our communities as the means to provide wellness and, you know, bring people together and just have them have a good time and share their experiences. It's a little bit of peer kind of support model, and strengthening networks of support, as I was saying just when I started my presentation, there's you know, in the context of immigration, many of us, when we first come to this country, all that we know from, you know, back home, all of our, you know, relatives and friends and the priest and the teacher and the doctors and the healers that we know are left behind. And we come to this country, all of that is no longer available to us to support us when we're in times of crisis. So this work that the promotores do helps rebuild those networks in these communities in a very effective way. They support community initiatives for community building and engagement, give visibility to the communities they represent, which I think is very important when it comes to mental health, because there's an element of self-esteem in there. And, you know, promotores are the ones who go out there, you know, wearing traditional outfit in a very, you know, proud manner, and they attend community events and engagements, you know, representing our community. And when we see that, we feel a sense of relief and or healing, actually. So it's very important, their role. And they serve as examples and role models, as I just say, described. And as I was saying before, they serve as cultural guardians. So they're becoming more and more the people that we look up to in terms of cultural values, spirituality, traditional healing, traditional medicine, spirituality. And that's very important, again, in the context of immigration, because we really don't have that anymore in here. So to have it in here and rebuild it in here to this model, it's very critical. And, you know, they learn and teach the values of our ancestral cultures and spirituality. And these are some of the activities that they engage on in terms of cultural and ceremonial activities. Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. You know, if you think about it, actually, it's a very, Dia de los Muertos is a very powerful healing, grieving time. And Tomasita's rightfully so doing her job as our healer consultant in our program reminded me that today is the first day of Dia de los Muertos. So if you have somebody that you have to, we want to remember, make sure to light a candle to guide them in their way back to our world, because they're coming to visit us tonight, and they'll be spending the night today with us and be going back tomorrow. Then we have Huaxiqui Bats, which is a very traditional Mayan ceremony from Guatemala that we, you know, found a group of healers that still do that ceremony in San Francisco, and we have engaged with them to support that initiative and to bring more people along to participate in the ceremony. We as well support other community, indigenous communities in the area, supporting them with, you know, like logistics and outreach and promotion of these other events, Chilón and Mayagüel in Cuauhtémoc. And then for the Yucatecos, which is, you know, the largest community in the area, we hold a few vaquerías, which is like the traditional celebration in the towns, and like the villages in Yucatán. And here it is. So cultural reaffirmation has become like the core part of the work of the Promotora de Salud. So it's at the center of what they do, and from there is that they develop interventions and outreach and connect with the community and connect the community to services and help the community realize that we're all together. And I'll talk a little bit more now in the next slide. These are again some of the things that our promotores engaged in. Did a little group, a focus group with the promotores that are been working with the program for the past couple of years. And these are some of the things that we hear from them about what are the things that they feel are more impactful in the community and in the work they do. So ceremonies is something that we've been trying to incorporate in our life, in our way of living in San Francisco. And people have embraced them back, which is very important. Traditional medicine, traditional healing practices, the workshops on arts, the dance lessons, and then spiritual and ceremonial activities. Mm-hmm. This is a picture of the dance trip. Next. This is a picture of a traditional Mayan celebration in San Francisco during a community forum on trauma. So the promotores put together a community forum to talk with the community about trauma and the effects of trauma. And part of the medicine of the healing process that we utilized was celebration and ceremony. And this was part of that activity. This is, again, part of that same activity. So we try to bring different Mayan communities together to have this activity. Mm-hmm. So, culture and healing, the impact of culture and the well-being of indigenous immigrants in San Francisco. I think, you know, I divided it into, again, this is part of what we talked with the promotoras about. This is what the promotoras told us. This is their observation and their daily work. And those are the things that they observed in providing services. So at the individual level, they've seen an increased self-esteem. They realize that their work helps break cycles of isolation, which, by the way, in the case of indigenous communities, it's much more pronounced, the issue, because we're not just immigrants, but also we belong to a subgroup within immigrant communities that tends to be already very isolated back in our countries for many different reasons. And so breaking the cycles of isolation is critical in order for us to provide interventions and to reach out to those communities, and they do it very effectively through their cultural preservation work. They provide opportunities for parents to teach cultural and linguistic values to children, offer opportunities for peer support, early identification, as I described earlier, opportunities for one-on-one education and counseling, and affirmation of positive cultural values. At the community level, there's an increased opportunities for civic participation, which is very important, again, in the case of indigenous communities. In a context of like the United States, we're very diverse and have so many cultures and so many competing interests among communities, it's very important that communities engage in civic participation and do community organizing. And they also, through the activities, provide opportunities for emerging leaderships to happen. Embracing cultural values, and then decolonization of cultural values. I think that's something that they've done very effectively. This whole idea of no longer look at our own cultural values as something that is under in some sort of scale, but trying to balance things out, and that's a lot of their work. Feeling acknowledged and part of a very diverse community, and engage in discussions about oppression and decolonization. Not your typical community health worker stand. There's a lot of art in there, which for us is our medicine. And last, these are some of the lessons that we've learned to our program. The power of culture to heal and create wellness. We've realized that culture is much more than just a feature of our identity. Culture is something that's being passed on to us generation after generation, because I think our elders knew that this was our medicine. This is the way we feel well, we feel better. And so cultural traditions and practice were passed on to us as means to promote health. So that's something we've learned in here. And then the whole idea of cultural competency, I think we've come to a point where when we do interventions that are rooted and started in the community and the culture of the community, we are going beyond cultural competency to the level of culturally rooted interventions. And I think there's a lot of work that can be done in that area. Not all indigenous or even Mayan communities are the same. Big lesson we learned, we tend to generalize all Mayan communities, and we are very diverse and we're very different from each other. We have a common root, but you know, today we're very different in many different ways. There's a strong connection between spirituality and health among indigenous communities. Cultural identity increases the capacity of immigrant communities to participate more actively in the lives of their communities. Once we recognize who we are, where we come from, who do we belong to, then we have the ability to engage with that knowledge with other communities, with the broader communities in our context. Traditional healing practices, the meaning of healing and well-being is a little different, and it's important that we understand that. I think an easy example that I always use is, because of my medical background, when a patient comes to see us, we tend to, you know, ask a few questions, write a prescription, give them their prescription, and I've asked them to come back in 2 weeks and hope that their symptom has gone away. And the in the view of other people about healing, that doesn't necessarily apply. We see healing in a very different way. I've come to learn to see healing in a very different way. So all these activities are part of a process of finding a balance in our different aspects of our being, physical, mental, spiritual health. And finding that balance takes much more than just a pill and 2 weeks of treatment. It takes years of practice, of embracing, of understanding, of acknowledging each other, of connecting with each other. And I think that's very well embedded within the cultural practices and the traditional healing practices of many indigenous communities. So there's a lot of work to be done in learning from those, you know, 5,000 years old best practices and health promotion. And so I think that, you know, we really need to look deeper into those aspects of healing and well-being. I think that's the last one. The other ones are just a series of pictures showing the promotoras, and, you know, I can probably just show them rapidly. There's some of the work that they helped put together, parades and things like that. And this is the dance trip again, all of them wearing their dress. And I think that's the end of it. Thank you.